This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
He's tiny. He overthrew Emmanuel Sanders.
Well, you didn't get anything to catch that. You're a grown-ass man.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
You really are children.
I know. It's great. It's great. You know what? The one thing I do...
Keeps you young.
As old as I am, I still view myself through the lens of a 17-year-old punk. You know what I mean?
Please explain.
No, my mindset is still... like a child. What are we having for dinner? We have chocolate cake for dessert? Chocolate cake?
Well,
when are we going out and partying again? This weekend? When? Tonight? Let's do that. Hey, okay. Work? I don't really care. It's just, let's go have fun. That's what. Study? No. No need to study. No need to study. Let's go to the fraternity. Let's get to the fraternity. Have fun. That's what I mean.
Well, I did notice one of our co-workers asking, you know, like, Steiny, what do you eat for breakfast? And you're like, well, you know, Susan usually prepares something, and you know, so I haven't really been eating anything in the morning lately.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just, like, you are a grown-up in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
Just not all of them, you know. I still like my cartoons.
Yeah, I'm super fortunate. I've got a woman at home that loves to cook. She loves it. She also, I hope I'm not talking out of turn here, but she says that's her love language. And so she's always been passionate about cooking, especially for the kids. But now that there's no kids there, she does it for Steiny.
Yeah, so?
You going to be home for dinner?
There's a lot of love.
I'll have something at about 6:30. What are you making, man? Thai meatballs. Yes!
What do you think Guru's love language is? I kind of want to break it down while he's not here.
Guru's love language.
So he can't get mad at me. Guru's love language.
Oh, no.
Wedding invitations?
Oh. Words of affirmation, 100%.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely.
When are you going to get a heart?
That is true. He does have a big heart.
He does.
He loves hard.
You know what? He's got a monster heart. Guru. And I don't mean he's a monster. I mean his heart's that big.
Eh, not all the time.
Hey, you know... just to give our listeners a general outline of how we go about things week in and week out here, especially during football season, is the 49ers will play a game on a Sunday, and Mondays, obviously, talk about the game. Tuesday, you go a little bit deeper into the game, and then Wednesday is a little bit of a transition day where you look back a little bit, but then you start thinking about the game upcoming, and that's the Patriots. But we call it halftime here at the station.
So what did we miss Wednesday?
That's right. So what did we miss? I saw something today that leads me, and maybe I'm late to the party, but I do think the Giants are in a little bit of trouble.
A little bit. They've won 5 in a row. What do you mean?
I know, but if you haven't read the stories today, the Giants are in Phoenix right now, playing the Diamondbacks. And Farhan Zaidi did an interview for the beat writers yesterday. And he said it. He said he has no idea if he's coming back or not. nor has he, the organization has told him nothing, and he has asked the organization nothing in terms of his status. So here we are in the last week of the regular season, and we don't know what's going to happen to Farhan Zaidi. That is never good. You don't you want to know? Do you think the Giants brass knows right now what they're doing with Farhan Zaidi?
I don't think they're in complete unison. Like I think there are, I would imagine the majority probably wants him gone. But my thing is, if you're expecting to compete for a postseason position, you generally don't completely remake your front office the year before. Like the Giants, I think, you know, you could say bad luck, injuries, subpar performances, whatever excuses you want to use for the way that this season has gone. You could say that that's the reason why, and next year we'll correct everything and we're going to be a postseason team like we should have been this year. Okay, so why would you then let go of your president of baseball operations? Why would you, I mean, maybe a manager, but why would you change managers after one season? You know, if they want to go and just rebuild this thing from the bottom, I completely understand. But then it does also beg the question why you just inked a player to a six-year deal and invested a significant sum of money. There's a lot of conflicting actions by the Giants that leads me to believe that there is not a unified front, whether it's with the board or other members of the front office. I think some people want Farhan here. A lot of people want him gone. But they're in a position that is, it's not good. Like right now as they stand, they're closer to the Colorado Rockies. And I don't just mean in terms of record, but like as a franchise, they're closer to where the Colorado Rockies are than where the San Diego Padres are. That's a problem.
No, I get that. I, for some reason, I don't, well, I, when you ask, if you ask me, what do you think's going to happen? I think, and I've said this, I think what's going to happen is kind of what Scott Osler said he thought was going to happen last week, was that Farhan's not going anywhere, but they're going to support him, or they're going to give him more, you know, give him another voice or two in the room. I think that's kind of the path of least resistance, and that's what I think they're going to end up doing.
I don't think that's a poor idea, but the big issue I have is that if you remove Zaidi from the equation, who are you getting?
Like, right.
You're not getting anybody that, number one, a lot of fans have heard of, because that's kind of the way that baseball operates. Like, I can run down a list of AGMs for Baltimore, or who's been another successful one, Cleveland. You can go pluck people off of those trees of successful franchises, but that's basically what you did with Farhan Zaidi. I mean, the reason why they went and got him is because of his association with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And before that, maybe the Oakland A's, who they had some respect for. I don't know. But nobody that's coming in is all of a sudden going to blow your socks off. Like, there isn't a Buster Posey equivalent of a president of baseball ops that's going to come in and save this franchise. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And in a way, I almost do think I would give Zaidi another year to see if these quote-unquote young players that have popped and have gotten a lot better are actually for real. Because that's the only way that they're going to get out of this mess, in my opinion. I don't think another big free agent is coming. I don't think that they're even going to be able to re-sign Blake Snell. I think that the sum of the parts of this team are going to be back next season. And they're basically just going to try and hope that the problems correct themselves. That's not a great plan. But I don't see how remaking and reforming your entire front office gets you any closer to the playoffs next year.
Well, and I also think if you make a change, then what invariably happens is the new GM comes in the first year and doesn't do much. He wants to get a lay of the land. And I just don't know how far or how close the San Francisco Giants are. I mean, is this a good sign or a bad sign? Or does it mean anything at all that on the day they were eliminated, they started a 5-game winning streak, which is their longest winning streak of the season? I mean, in a way, that's a bad look.
I mean, it's a bad look, but it's also, I mean, they're playing without pressure.
Yeah, that's true.
They're playing without any expectation, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe they also be trying to, I mean, they can play spoiler. Like Arizona losing hurts.
Right.
They're in a postseason race. So maybe they want to stick it to one of their division rivals. But, you know, the thing is, if you look around the league, there's a lot of teams that have, I don't want to say make quick choices, because moving off of Zaidi wouldn't be a quick decision. But it's not as if things just turn around magically. Like, for example, the Boston Red Sox, they fired Chaim Bloom, their president of baseball operations, or like COO of baseball, whatever they call it over there. And they hired Craig Breslow, who on paper is actually just what I think the Giants would try to get, which is a former player. He's a Yale grad, and he pitched in the league for a decade. And he embraces analytics, but he's a former player, he's a pitcher, and he's been involved with organizations before. So, like, that checks every single box. Well, look at the Red Sox. They're 500.
Right.
Like, they aren't significantly better than they were a year ago. And if they were going to be, it's because they've been able to retain their best players, and those players have played well. So, just because you get someone else in here doesn't mean you're going to get what you want, which is, of course, winning more baseball games.
Yeah. No, I just think they're in a pickle. They're in a pickle. Steve's in the city. What's going on, Steve? How you doing, man?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I think Farhan's had his chance. And if I am the Giants, I'd be on the phone to Theo Epstein. I don't know where he is or what he's doing right now. But it'd be a pretty simple question, which would be, what position and how much money do you want to come in here and run things? Theo has turned around and won championships at the two most snake-bitten franchises in baseball history. And I'd say, look, if it takes 5 years, that's what it takes. But let's get someone in here who really knows how to do it.
Appreciate the call. Why do I just not think that's their MO?
Oh, the Giants would get Theo Epstein if he was available. And I'm sorry, I don't mean this in a degrading tone towards the caller. Theo Epstein ain't sniffing the Giants. Why would Theo Epstein ever take a job with the San Francisco Giants? With his resume, with what he's currently doing, which, by the way, is a part owner of the Boston Red Sox and the Fenway Group, he's involved with Liverpool in the Premier League, and he also does work with the front office of Major League Baseball. He's on track to be the commissioner of Major League Baseball if he wants.
Is he really?
Yes. Theo Epstein doesn't want to deal with day-to-day operations anymore, especially for a team that can't help itself. Like, and that's, well, that is disrespectful. No disrespect, but Theo Epstein is bigger than the San Francisco Giants.
Is there anybody like him out there?
No. That's why everyone wants him. Like, I'm sure he could take an offer with any team. I mean, if he could remake the Giants, why wouldn't he go and, I don't know, why wouldn't he have taken the Baltimore Orioles job a couple of years, you know?
No, I got you.
Why wouldn't he come back to Boston and help resurrect that franchise? You know, why wouldn't he help the Mets? I'm sure Steve Cohen, who's got coffers that are deeper than, I don't know, some basin, like, he could just pay him whatever he wanted.
Yeah, no, I just meant in general, I don't see the Giants ownership group bringing a guy like that, even if there are other examples of people similar to him, where they're going to write a monster check for a GM.
Well, you're looking for Theo Epstein's also 50 now, but you are looking for the next Theo Epstein. That's what every team is looking for. You're looking for a young, bright, analytic-driven mind that can come in and basically apply their, you know, their philosophies to an organization that has been a bit behind. I mean, that's what Farhan was supposed to be.
Right.
So, you know, one thing that I also take note of is the Giants cleaning house on their scouting department. They fired, I think it's 4 old-time baseball scouts. Okay, so that signals that they're moving in more of a modern direction. I don't know if it's good or bad yet, but that is noticeable to me because a lot of teams around Major League Baseball don't have, you know, kind of these long-time tenured scouts anymore. Either they will use consultant companies, you know, analytic-driven models. They'll basically pawn off scouting to other places because they can use data from college. They can use data from the minor leagues. You don't actually have to have people on the ground looking at these players every single day to figure out what you need to be successful. So maybe that's where Farhan is going to get some more help this offseason from outside sources. You know, maybe the Giants don't just want his fingerprints on this franchise anymore. They want other people. But either way, if Farhan gets let go at the end of the season, I don't think that'd be a shock. But I would be very surprised if he's the lone person making all future baseball decisions for the Giants.
We're assuming that Buster Posey doesn't want to be the GM. Are we so sure about that?
I feel pretty positive. I also, to be honest, I think he'd be a little bit in over his head.
Do you really?
Yeah. I mean, when you're the president of baseball ops, at least from my understanding, like you
got to be a manager.
You deal with everything.
Right.
From rookie ball to your best player on your major league team, you deal with everything. And is Buster Posey going to be down in, up in Sacramento looking at Reggie Crawford? I personally don't want him to do that. Now, if Buster Posey is side-by-side with Zaidi and is helping him make those choices, to me, that's a far better role for him. And something, honestly, I think that suits him more because as much as Posey is, he's a great and he's a figure and he's someone that is synonymous with Giants baseball, I don't really think he likes to do the dance with the media,
right,
and fans, and that's never really been him to me. He speaks by his actions.
Yeah, and yet by the same token, when he speaks, he carries a lot of weight, obviously. A week ago today, I went down the street to Sam's Grill, and Buster Posey was there with Larry Bear for a couple hours. Wonder what they're talking about. I don't know.
I also can't recall a player as great as him ever taking up the mantle of GM. Manager, yes. Players have been in, Hall of Fame players have been involved. Well, I guess, no, but Joe Torre was a manager, and he was never in the Yankees front office. I can't recall a player of his stature ever just taking over an organization, at least, publicly.
All right, here's the other thing that we missed a little bit this week is it's the penultimate Oakland A's game at the Coliseum. Now, you went last night, you're going tonight.
Yep.
And you're going tomorrow.
Yep.
What was the atmosphere there last night? I didn't even look. Big crowd or?
Yeah, I mean, for the Coliseum, it had a big crowd. It's kind of, it's melancholy, but I think everyone's kind of at peace with it. It hits people at different times, I was walking around the parking lot yesterday with a pop and was just kind of, I was obviously searching for trinkets. I was kind of looking for collectibles and memorabilia that I could
pick up a piece of grass or something like that, like they do after the World Series.
No, they're selling Matt Stairs jerseys and they're selling, Bash Brothers posters and they're selling bobbleheads, Mark Ellis bobble. Like they're selling things that I would personally like. I know they might not mean much to you, but.
No, but go ahead. I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, but there are people who were taking pictures. There were people who were barbecuing and having fun. There are people, I saw a couple of people that were crying. Like, there's just a wide range of emotion right now. And, I had a chance to take my brother yesterday. We're going tonight and tomorrow. And it's just a chance to kind of say goodbye to a place that, honestly, I fell in love with baseball at.
Yeah. I take it you saw John Fisher's letter to the Oakland A's fans.
Yeah, there was a typo.
Was there?
Yeah.
What was it?
I mean, it's just a small thing, but
missed a comma,
something like that. But it's appropriate, He overlooked it.
People, he tried. Put it on the tombstone. That's going to be his legacy.
No.
We tried. Here's what has been hitting me about the A's, and I got it, it's kind of hitting me now a little bit, is let me ask you if you could do this and how a guy of Fisher stature views things as opposed to somebody like you and me.
Okay.
All I can do is put myself in Fisher's position. If if I owned the Oakland A's and I had the money John Fisher had or has, I don't know how I would move a franchise and not sell it. Like, are these guys in such a bubble? Are they so elite and aloof and out of the public eye that he doesn't think twice about stranding a fan base or moving a team? I know it's easy for me to say, really? You're going to move the team instead of selling it to someone who would keep it here? Like, that's a level of cold, hard business that I must not even understand a sliver of, because I think it would be hard to go through the rest of your life, quite frankly. But maybe he doesn't have to see people because he lives somewhere where isn't accessible to Joe Fan.
Well, I'm going to misquote Goo here, but what does he say all the time? It's like, money can't buy you happiness, can it buy you a hell of a time? I mean, like, what if I told you that if you moved your team in 4 years, their net worth is double?
Okay.
So you're going to pull in an extra few billion dollars. And I know it's easy for us to sell. You already got a few billion. Why not have just a few billion more?
No doubt.
It's the whole bigger boat complex. Like, if you've ever been to Miami and you see all these massive cruise ships, massive boats that people drive around, there's always someone with a bigger boat. You can always go get a bigger boat. You can always make more money. And that's the selfish part about it is, no, he doesn't care. Like, he clearly doesn't. He doesn't care what people think of him. He doesn't care about displacing a team or, I don't know, stabbing fans in the proverbial cardiac muscle. Like, he doesn't care.
I get that, but, I always said this about Barry Zito, okay? Barry Zito signed that monster deal with the Giants.
Hell of a country singer, by the way.
$126 million, wasn't that what it was?
It was the largest contract given out to a pitcher, I believe, at the time.
And obviously, he was a major disappointment. And everybody said, well, yeah, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He's got the money. You know what? He couldn't walk around the Bay Area with his head held high. He really couldn't. I don't care if he made all that money. He became somebody that was associated with one of the biggest underachievers or biggest disappointments in baseball. And it's like, that had to take a toll on him. And the idea that John Fisher is willing to go, he's going to live in infamy. He's going to be Art Modell. You know what I mean? He's going to be the guy who moved the team. And like that will be the top line of his obituary. And I get it. He'll be dead. He won't care. But in the meantime, maybe it's just my naivete, but why not just sell the team? It's not like you're... Does he really think he's going to go to another city and now he's going to be able to operate like a regular baseball team? Do you think if and when the A's move that all of a sudden they're going to start spending money? Because I don't.
Not necessarily, but once they get a new owner, they will. I hope. But, I mean, you never know. Like, I mean, there are notoriously cheap owners across all sports. It's just in baseball, there's no salary cap. Like, I was reading this article a couple weeks ago about these insurance policies that NFL teams will take out on specific players. So if a player goes down with a season-ending injury, the team recoups some of that money. And it actually provides cap relief, and there's other reasons that they do it. But the Cincinnati Bengals, I don't know if anybody... They're a notoriously cheap franchise.
Right.
And even though they've paid Burrow, it's like... But that's under the salary cap. Okay, they don't put out insurance policies on their players. They don't have an expansive scouting department. There used to be this running joke that for a long time that you could just watch the college football national championship game and you'd see six future Bengals. Because like they would just watch the games on television and then take whoever's the best player on one of those big-name programs in the first round. I'm not sure if it's the same case now, but like there are cheap franchises. The only reason they might still be in Cincinnati is because they built them a stadium and it's publicly funded, which is what Fisher is looking for. And could not be provided in Oakland. And so whether it's selling the team or not selling the team, if someone's going to pay for him to go to Las Vegas, he's going to be, I'm out. Or Sacramento first, I guess, whoever gets stuck in purgatory.
Yeah, we can talk more about this on the other side. If anybody wants to jump in, we can do that. It's halftime of the week. That's what we're calling it. Don't miss the kickoff show this Sunday with one of my main men, Evan Giddings, and Jason Dumas. They come on live 2 hours before the start of the game. Join us at the Hilton Santa Clara for delicious food, great drinks, and the best pregame show in the Bay. It's all presented by Habas Law. You've been wronged. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabasLaw.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Damn, I don't check you.
Yeah, Steiny.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Evan Giddings in for Daryl the Guru Johnson, and we are rolling through a Wednesday.
Woo!
Yeah, having a little bit of fun. It's moving.
We've seen you smile a couple times.
Yeah, wish the best for Guru. Hopefully he gets some stuff. We wish him well. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. We're just talking about the A's moving. Final homestand of all time, apparently, is coming up tomorrow. They play tonight and then tomorrow.
Yeah, the one thing I would encourage people to do is not vandalize the Coliseum. And this isn't like a, you know, respect it or whatever. It's like it's still going to be used in the future. So I saw people ripping seats out of the ground yesterday and stuff. It's like the Oakland Roots are still going to play there. There's still going to be things happening at the Coliseum. So I would encourage people to just not do that.
That's fair.
As much as they can. I mean, and a lot of people are pretty pissed and angry.
Right.
And there's certainly reason to be frustrated. And not a lot of people have an outlet to discuss it like we get to, but please just don't vandalize the Coliseum.
That's fair. Let's go to Fred. Fred's in Belmont. Hey, Fred, how you doing?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for kind of taking my call. You know, I hopped in here after I heard you, Steiny, talk about why doesn't he just sell the team.
Yeah.
I used to be upset with Manfred, but this is squarely on the owner. So I got two things. One, the owners could have went to Manfred and said, hey, let's do him like Donald Sterling. Let's get him a buyer. Let's get him a price and say, you are no longer a part of the club because of what you've done to this team. It's an abomination. The A's are a classic franchise. We ain't the Marlins. We ain't the Rockies. We've had all kind of amazing historical players. We've been involved in historical World Series. It is an abomination how this is happening to the franchise. That's one. And two, this may have been mentioned before, but if it has, I'm going to mention it again. I don't see the A's leaving Sacramento. They don't have money for the stadium in Vegas. They're already about to tear the Tropicana down in Vegas in the next, I believe, 6 to 9 months. They want to open, what, is it 2028, I believe? He doesn't have any funding for that. There's no kind of way in the world Vegas is going to have a big empty hole on the strip while he fumbles around and fiddles around with how to get money to build a stadium when I believe he's the fourth richest owner in Major League Baseball. And with that being said, in Sacramento, he's got a willing sucker in Vivek Ranadive, who he can go ahead and help have him buy into the team. Up there, they can figure out how to build whatever type of stadium on some cheaper land, and he still would have access to the Bay Area TV market. And I was talking with someone the other day, and I was like, well, yo, the Giants got to approve that. I can easily see that being done. So, again, I don't see the A's moving to Vegas. I see them staying in Sac. Thank you for letting me get on and share my opinion.
Absolutely, Fred. Thank you. I wouldn't bet on the A's ending up in Vegas. I just wouldn't.
Look, to me, it doesn't matter. The whole point is that they're not going to be playing in Oakland. I mean,
that's true. It doesn't matter.
Where they play in Sac, they play in Vegas, they could play in Saskatchewan, New York. Like, it doesn't matter. Like,
I don't know the answer to this.
I mean, people are sad.
Can Sacramento... Could Sacramento have a Major League Baseball team and support it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean...
Then I could see something happening there.
You know, I might not be a big fan of Vivek and the way that he's kind of used this opening to get into Major League Baseball, but at the same time, he's a big reason the Sacramento Kings are still in Sacramento as opposed to Seattle. They almost left.
True. That's true.
He's got a lot of money, and he's put his money where his mouth is. So from that standpoint, yeah, and there's a large NorCal fan base that I think generally supports the Giants. A lot of my friends from Sacramento are Giants fans.
Okay.
But I don't see why they wouldn't try and embrace the A's if they actually got a local team. You know, I don't know.
The one thing I learned about owners if you're the 32 Major League Baseball owners is the one thing that's not going to happen is 31 owners alienating or ostracizing or kicking out one owner unless it's, you know, something like Donald Sterling where it affects the bottom line of an entire league. Like, the way the owners think is we can't do this to John Fisher because they could do it in Pittsburgh next or Tampa Bay. And you just, this is, unfortunately, it's their company. He owns it.
Well, all right. You ever seen the movie The Natural?
Yeah. Robert Redford?
Yeah. Yeah, Robert Redford. Was it Robert Duvall?
Gina Davis?
That's League of Their Own. But but in The Natural, the owner of the team.
Right.
He sits in this dark room with the shade down. It's theatrical, but that's essentially what every owner is. Like, they're in their dark room by themselves, and they don't interact with the normal folk, and they own their team. They're not going to go against one of their own unless it's, like, right, absolutely last chance, unless it's going to hurt their bottom line. And I know John Fisher stinks in every sense of the word, but the bottom line has gone up in recent memory across Major League Baseball. Teams are making more money than ever. Business is good.
Right.
It doesn't matter about the popularity of the game or how people feel here in Oakland. They're making money hand over fist, and as long as that continues, they have no reason to exercise one of their own. That's just the reality of the situation, and it sucks because, to be honest, if they were going to kick John Fisher out of their ranks, they would have done it years ago.
Like, that's true.
I mean, this isn't a new problem. It just is coming to a head because the lease of the Coliseum is finally up at the end of 2024, and they got to find a new place to play.
If you build a baseball stadium in Sac, it's got to be domed, right? Got to be a dome.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Really?
Well, it should, but it doesn't have to be, and that's why that's not the only issue that's going on in Sac.
Oh, what else?
They don't have a clubhouse that connects to the field.
That doesn't sound very major league.
They don't have offices. They're basically, like, I don't know if you ever had in middle school when they're like redoing, you know, the buildings or whatever, yeah, and you got to be in these, you know, trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically going to be the A's front office next year, from my understanding.
I gotcha. Speaking of something like that, I was watching my Tulane Green Wave this past weekend.
Oh yeah,
they won. They're now 2-2. We're about to get on a roll, by the way. Go Green Wave! They played Louisiana.
They started the AAC yet?
Not yet. No, okay. They played Louisiana last week, formerly Louisiana Lafayette, and the stadium's under construction. So the stadium on the one side had all this brick, and nobody sat there, and they were all sitting on the other side, for whatever that's worth. I just thought that was interesting. Tulane's pretty good. They're going to be all right.
How come they don't want to join the Pac?
I don't know.
The new Pac-12.
I don't know. Maybe because they've got certain academic standards at Tulane, and they don't want the Pac-12 dragging them down.
That's the reason.
That might be the reason. I don't know.
I always wonder if it's like, I don't know, if you worry about, I don't even think it has to do with competition. Usually it doesn't have to do with just money. Maybe the deal wasn't good enough for them. Like, for example, Gonzaga is getting an equal revenue share of the Pac-12, I don't know, whatever, split. But they don't have a football team. Like, I think right. That's how the Pac-12 enticed Gonzaga to bring their basketball program in and say, it doesn't matter that you don't have football, you don't have to compete, we'll still give you an equal share because your basketball program is that dominant and we want an affiliation with you. Which also is now opened up the door for, I mean, just an Ottoman Empire-like reign for St. Mary's College in the WCC. I mean, once the Gonzaga Bulldogs are out, watch out.
Randy Bennett? All right, let's get back to a little football.
Let's do it. Portables. Oh, thank you, Dante.
Should we take it? He's starting to make a name for himself out here.
Is this our boy in Boston?
Yeah. I full disclosure, it says J-Dog in Boston, parentheses. If you don't want to take it, you don't have to. Let's go, J-Dog. I'll give you a forum. I'm not about censorship here. What's up, J-Dog? Well, go ahead. Rip him.
First of all, I appreciate you taking my call, this great show, this great station. But just please, just for the callers in the East Coast, just lay off the baseball talk. Baseball sucks. And more importantly, Giants baseball is snooze fest radio. Okay?
But how, you know what? J-Dog, as long as I have you on the phone, I mean, come on. You're not putting yourself in our shoes. It'd be like if the Red Sox left. And even though you don't like baseball, come on. That's where that hurts.
Nah, I get you. I'm sorry. I apologize. Barry Bonds is my favorite player of all time, but I do apologize. I'm sensitive. Well, let's just talk meat and potatoes, Stoney. Okay. I know you think I'm just this irrational Kyle Shanahan hater.
Nah, not necessarily.
No matter what, I just want to ask him, and it's just this. But it's just, you know, I'm looking around the NFL, and I'm seeing all these coaches at the top of the NFL, the Super Bowl contenders, and what are they doing? They're playing a lot of their young guys, you know. Why is it that Shanahan doesn't play the young guys unless he has to? I mean, realistically, we probably wouldn't even see Jordan Mason if Christian McCaffrey wasn't hurt. He probably would have ran Christian McCaffrey into the ground just like he did last year. And now we see Jordan Mason, what is he, probably top three or number one leading the league in rushing. You know what I mean? So when you have this team that has these years and years of deep playoff runs, it's beneficial to you. Get some of these guys playing time early that have been in camp all year, and they can take the beating, they can take the pounding, and then you can ease in your Debo and your Ayuk's and everybody like that during the year. You know what I mean? This is what I see with these great coaches doing. You know what I mean? And when you look at a guy like Sean McVay, you know, he's playing these young guys. These young guys on the offensive line are getting great reps, guys that have been in camp. And guess what? Now you got a guy like Cooper Kupp, Puka Nakata got hurt, and they could kind of come back and ease their way in. I think Sean McVay just does a hell of a job. It's like he took Kyle's playbook and Kyle's whatever Kyle does and just took it to another level. And I'm just so sick of the fact that it's almost like Kyle can literally hand the ball to the other team, and you guys, Kyle Shanahan supporters, still don't care. You know, look at the obvious. You know what I mean? Like, you sign Kyle Shanahan, you sign off on the offset release or whatever, and that's coming. You know, you got all these bums. You got Collins and Gross Matos and every stiff we got from Cleveland, and they don't even amount to one Eric Armstead. That was a mistake. We're not even going to go back to the DeForest Buckner stuff and all of that. All right. But it's just like you go into the season with Colt McKivitz after you got four quarterbacks killed 2 years prior.
All right. I'll tell you what, J-Dog. J-Dog, you know this. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. I mean, I can't argue with the main premise that if you're getting to be a more veteran team, you probably should work in some youngsters, but is there a parallel, Evan, to be made? And I know that the 49ers haven't won a Super Bowl, but is there a similarity between Steve Kerr and Kyle Shanahan? They prefer veterans in a big way. They just trust them.
I also don't think that's a Niners-specific team, and we get siloed in here, but look, I'm just looking up and down at the rookies from this most recent class.
Yep.
The one that's played the biggest role for a team that is, well, we'll say, like, you know, has the same expectation as the Niners is probably Xavier Worthy, you know, for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's been getting some run, but, like, Jacob Cowing is a fourth-round pick. Isaac Garendo is a later pick. Ricky Pearsall, unfortunately, was injured. Hasn't had a chance to play. But if you look at the receiving leaders among rookies, okay, Malik Nabers was the sixth overall pick. Right. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the fourth overall pick. Brock Bowers, 13th overall pick. Brian Thomas, 23rd overall pick. Rumba Dunes, a ninth overall pick. McConkey, an early second. Like, and if you just go through the running backs, the rookie who is leading all first-year players in rushing yards is Jaden Daniels. He's a quarterback. Bucky Irving's a backup running back for Tampa Bay. It's not as if across the league, coaches just throw rookies into the fire and they immediately succeed. So I don't think Shanahan, I hope it doesn't sound like I'm, you know, defending him. I think he makes mistakes like every head coach. But guys just don't let rookies run roughshod. That's not how it works. So, like, the fact that they have a starting right guard who's a rookie this year is growth from Kyle Shanahan. And Dominic Pooney has been probably one of the few guys on that line who hasn't been in the, you know, the bullseye mark of PFF.
Right.
It's been Brendel. It's been McKivitz. It's been basically everybody around him, you know. So, sure, can Kyle Shanahan trust his younger players more? Probably. But he's not the only one that doesn't do it.
No, and I mean, if you look at what happened Sunday against the Rams. You know, Mustafa had a chance to make a play, and he didn't make it. And maybe the next time he makes it. I also think it does have something to do with where the 49ers are. If it is truly, you know, at the end of their run, if this is, I'll just call it, if this is their last best chance to win it, well, then you know the direction he's going to go in. He's going to go with the veterans. Now, the question is, if you look at a guy like, let's say, Pooney, or let's even say Garendo, or, I mean...
Like, what have I told you Renardo Green's going to start this week? Because Isaac Yiadom has been absolutely abysmal on the outside.
I would say, let's give him a try.
Okay, so that's putting trust in a rookie. He's your second-round pick, is your corner.
But I think what people quibble about is... Like, Isaac Garendo is getting carries because McCaffrey's out. So I think what people believe is that the only time he goes to a young player, it's always more out of necessity than maybe lengthening the careers of the veteran players, or at least taking a load off the veteran players to give them a better chance later in the season.
I'm trying to win football games.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm not saying that I adhere to that, because for the longest time when we talked about the Warriors and their young players, I just simply always asked, how are they going to play? I mean, they're not good enough to play on this team right now.
Or the players, again, it's out of necessity. For example, Devondre Campbell is, you know, not very good last week. He brought in D. Winters to replace him, and then D. Winters got hurt. Okay, so you got to go back to the vet. Like, you know, young players, it takes time. They're not just going to step in, and you're not going to have, like, not every player can just be basically a Jaden Daniels who's going to come in and transform your franchise. That's not how it works, especially when you're picking at the place that the Niners are. I thought they had a really good draft this year. You know, and sure, Jordan Mason has been buried, I guess, but that's also because up until this year, you had Elijah Mitchell. Like, we might have not seen Jordan Mason if Elijah Mitchell was healthy this season. You know, and he's out for the year with a hammy, but that's, I don't know, like, I feel like that's how football works. You know, you play your best players, and the only time that you go to your depth or your young guys is when those best players are out.
I do wonder about something the caller said about he said, you know, the only reason Jordan Mason has gotten these touches, or at least the number of them, is because McCaffrey's hurt. Do you think, like, let me ask you this, and I know he's not healthy, but if McCaffrey came into this year after two seasons of heavy usage and he were ready for game one, do you believe that Christian McCaffrey would have accumulated over 300 touches again this year if he stayed healthy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
100%.
I do too. And I just think that's the way Kyle Shanahan coaches. If you're available, he's going to use you. And, like, I don't believe if McCaffrey weren't hurt, I don't think there's any part of Kyle Shanahan who would say, you know what, let's start limiting McCaffrey because he's 28. He just had two big years, and we got Jordan Mason. You know, let's make sure to get Jordan Mason some reps and take a little bit of the load off McCaffrey. I don't think that's the way Shanahan thinks.
Well, I think Mason got some burn during the postseason last year, you know, down the stretch of the Detroit game.
Did he?
It was either him or Mitchell. I mean, either or, but, and the 510 brings up a fair point. We're not asking him to let the man play 40 snaps, four or five snaps a game just to see what he got. I don't know about you, Steiny, but I feel like that's like asking Kerr to play a rookie for 5 minutes. That's unfair to the player to come in and just expect to be full bore for those five plays when you don't have any sort of rhythm. You know, in a way, I feel like the running back position, and people have talked about this, the running back position is a position in which you kind of build momentum over time. I mean, I remember listening to, I think it was LaDainian Tomlinson, talk about sometimes he didn't feel like he was into the rhythm of a game before he got 10 touches. Like, so just to expect a guy to come in and give you 5 yards of pop off the pine, in a perfect world, that's great.
Right.
But a lot of players can't just immediately be inserted into the game and be at their best. That's why the moment that... So let's go back to the Jets week one.
All right.
Sauce Gardner's off the field for, I don't know, some reason that Saleh talked. He wasn't hurt, but he just was off the field for a series. I don't think it's any coincidence that Brock Purdy started dialing up through the air on that series.
Right.
Because the entire secondary shifts when their best player's not on the field. So it's the same reason why if you see a veteran quarterback identify a rookie corner or a backup corner, the moment that guy steps on the field, they're going after him. It's the same reason why Matthew Stafford saw Devondre Campbell on the outside against the tight end, threw that ball up to him, because you pick out weaknesses.
Purdy did that to somebody on the Rams defense, too. The Rams lost one of their defensive backs, and he went right to somebody.
And that's a savvy play.
Yeah. I'm looking at some of Mason's numbers. So... he carried the ball 40 times last year, 43 the year before, and now he's already up to 67. As far as the playoffs go,
maybe it was Mitchell.
Yeah, I think you were thinking of Mitchell. Jordan Mason played. He had two rushing attempts in the 2022 playoffs. No rushing attempts last year, but. Yeah, I don't know what the answer to that question is about how he would have used Mason if Christian McCaffrey were healthy this year. But I do think Kyle's the kind of guy who says...
Yeah, Elijah Mitchell had the last touchdown of the NFC Championship game.
Okay, so Yeah, I do think that he looks at McCaffrey and says, McCaffrey can go. I'm going to play him. And what's he made his name on in this league? 25 touches a game. So that's what we're going to give him.
I mean, do you not want Christian McCaffrey to... Well, like, if you're saying, okay, he's going to get hurt, then, yeah, of course you want to limit him.
Right.
But I want my best player touching the ball as much as humanly possible because that gives me the best chance to win the game.
I mean, yes. I mean, the problem with McCaffrey is he's so good out of the backfield that he's always going to play on third down. So he's always going to play every down, essentially, on offense. Even Jordan Mason comes off the field a little bit here and there. I mean, yeah, in a perfect world, you get McCaffrey 16 touches or 16 runs and Mason 8. But you can't always do that because all that stuff depends on the way the game's going. All right. 888-957-9570 is the number. This is the What Did We Miss hour, I guess, because I'm going to come back and maybe talk a little Warriors. There's a couple little things we need to tell you about. And like I said, Media Day coming up on Monday on 95.7 The Game.